This edition of the week is sponsored by Invitrogen. Gibco Cell Culture products now feature easy-to-read, color-coded, and writable labels that are easy to find. Take a closer look at www.invitrogen.com/labels.
This week, what makes a postdoc program one of the best?
The salary that everyone is given is determined based on experience as opposed to what fellowships you have. So everyone is considered equal, and it's all based on experience, which I think really makes a difference.
Coming up, good pay, child care benefits, and an administration that listens. Hear more about what makes for some of the best postdoc programs. Hi, I'm Carrie Grenz, and you're listening to The Week, the weekly news podcast from The Scientist. In news this week, satiety and reward are linked by the hormone PYY, GlaxoSmithKline sues the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, and the extensive misconduct of a Norwegian researcher continues to surface. Andrea Garleski has more from The Scientist Daily News. Peptide YY is thought to signal satiety in the brain, and now British researchers report that it also affects activity in the orbitofrontal cortex. The region is implicated in emotional and reward processing, supporting the idea that feeding behavior has a lot to do with reward. Researchers have debated whether feeding is dominated by the homeostatic demands of the hypothalamus or by reward-based signals sent from cognitive areas. The study is the first physiological demonstration that pleasure circuits play a key role in driving eating habits. It's possible there is a switch from one system to another in feeding. Paul Matthew of Imperial College London said, quote, "One possible explanation for these results is that when people fasted, their drive to eat comes predominantly from more primitive brain centers. When they have been fed, the drive comes from the anticipated pleasure or value of the food." The findings are published in the latest issue of Nature. In litigation news, pharmaceutical giant GlaxoSmithKline filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. The company is seeking to block implementation of new rules that would limit the number of claims contained in any one patent application and the number of times applications can be reevaluated. The rules are scheduled to take effect November 1st. The USPTO says the new rules are needed to streamline the patenting process, but drug and biotech companies, as well as university tech transfer officials, claim the rules will make it more costly and time-consuming for them to secure rights to their life sciences discoveries. The company's lawsuit states the rules could threaten, quote, whether the life-saving drugs innovated by GSK and other similarly situated members of the pharmaceutical industry will be invented in the first place. The lawsuit was filed October 10th with the Federal District Court for the Eastern District of Virginia. Also in news, more dishonesty uncovered about John Sundbo, the Norwegian oral cancer researcher who was found guilty of extensively fabricating data. The U.S. Office of Research Integrity reported this month that Sundbo also falsified data on a grant application that was funded by the National Cancer Institute and on a progress report for the grant. A Norwegian investigation concluded in 2006 that Sundbo's long history of scientific misconduct stretches back to his PhD, which was subsequently retracted along with a number of scientific publications. Although Sundbo lost his license to practice medicine, news reports in Norway say that he is now working as a dentist in a public clinic in Norway with limited authorization. The Office of Research Integrity's report stated that Sundbo voluntarily agreed not to work with the U.S. government again. That was The Scientist's Andrea Garleski. You can read more from The Scientist Daily News on our website, thescientist.com. While you're there, vote for the best place to do a postdoc. Annually, The Scientist publishes the results from our Best Places to Work survey, submitted by you, our readers. And right now, we're taking your submissions to determine the best place to do a postdoc. To find out more about what makes a great postdoc program, our careers editor, Adita Zelinska, spoke with a few of this year's top-ranking institutions. Gaia Skabinski, a postdoc at the J. David Gladstone Institutes in San Francisco, tells us why she thinks Gladstone ranked number 2 in 2007 in the North American Top 40.
Talking from my own personal experience, my PI is very approachable and he's always constantly available and gives me feedback about my experiments. And then kind of in terms of the global picture of the actual institute, there are lots of programs in place for career development. We have a leadership management program that allows us to develop as a scientist and become kind of better leaders and prepare us for taking on our own lab in the future. We have like courses and lecturing courses set up so that we can improve our lecturing skills and our writing skills for both grants and papers.
That's great.
Also, I think a big thing in McGladstone is that the salary that everyone is given is determined and based on experience as opposed to what fellowships you have. So everyone is considered equal, and it's all based on experience, which I think really makes a difference. And the salary, we're always pushing as postdocs to get our salary increased, and so our salary is higher than the average NIH salary.
Right, great.
Which really helps.
Skibinski says one of the Gladstone's biggest strengths is their effective process for addressing their weaknesses. Two of Gladstone's weaknesses, according to last year's survey, were family and pay. Skibinski explains the process for improvement.
Annually, we meet with the directors of the three institutes that make up the Gladstone, and kind of we can discuss anything that we want. So it's like a real sounding board. So if we have issues about benefits or just the training program, or this year it was a big thing with childcare, we can. They're really open to listen to us, and they kind of really want our program to improve.
And do you see a good response from them? You have these discussions, but do you have a response as well?
Totally. I think that really surprised me. Like the meetings that I attended, the biggest things were salary. We wanted to have an increase, and that's what we got. And also we wanted to improve the childcare. I haven't got children myself, but a lot of my colleagues do. And I know that's a real issue for them, particularly the women in science, I think. And so there's been a huge development in terms of the setting up of this childcare assistance program.
That was Gaia Skibinski, a postdoc at the J. David Gladstone Institutes. Number three in the 2007 postdoc survey was the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Hal Zenick, Director for Health, National Health and Environmental Effects Research Laboratory, says that postdoctoral students are attracted to the EPA to do science that can have a direct impact on human health. But there's always room for improvement. Zenick speaks about some of the ways he'd like to see the postdoctoral program improve.
One of the things I think that we're going to try and do in the program is try and enhance the experience so that although a student many of our students come in and their project involves them being engaged with more than one researcher. We would like to have them have experiences that may cut across more than one research division. Or here in Research Triangle Park might actually cut across more than one laboratory. Hmm. So they begin to understand a little bit more about the scope of the types of problems they're undertaking. So one of our goals is to sort of enhance the interdisciplinary flavor of what it is that EPA and its research arm does in trying to tackle environmental problems.
Zenick also explains how the scientist survey has affected the EPA's program.
It's always nice to get some independent validation of the science you're doing. And by virtue of the fact that these students and fellows rank these programs so highly, and you look at the questions you're asking, they have at least acknowledged both the quality and the relevance and the impact of our science. And that, I think, is always very, very valuable to an organization.
Mm.
I think the other thing that's benefited is when you go through the survey, it points out areas that we can attempt to strengthen.
Yeah,
and so that the survey is very valuable to our organization in terms of looking at these points, sitting down with the graduate and postdoc organization, trying to understand what these points are about, and then can we improve upon them. So the survey really creates an important feedback loop to us in terms of continuing to strengthen the program as well. And then finally, when you get ranked like this, it's a great PR. other people are going to hear about it and going to be, I didn't know EPA even did research, I ought to be looking into this, and that allows us to have a greater outreach by having such a high ranking.
That was Hal Zenick from the EPA talking about the 2007 survey for the best places to do a postdoc. Go online today and fill out the survey for what you think is the ideal institution. And check back in March 2008 when we'll announce the results. Our website is thescientist.com. There you can also find our daily news, blogs, and all our content from The Scientist magazine. That's all for The Scientist podcast this week. Thanks for tuning in.
This edition of The Week was brought to you by Invitrogen. Gibco cell culture products now feature easy-to-read, color-coded, and writable labels that are easy to find. Take a closer look at www.invitrogen.com/labels.